Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org.
Today on Virginia Conversations, we're catching up with two filmmakers who have brought their craft to the Old Dominion. I'm May Lily Lee. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk with Sarah Elizabeth Timmons about movies she's producing that are being filmed from one end of the state to the other. But first, we begin with Adriana Trigiani. Adriana's novels have been translated and sold in over 35 countries around the world. Since we last spoke with Adriana nearly a year ago, a lot has happened in her professional life. Besides a new book, Adriana turned a book into a movie. She directed the film version of Big Stone Gap in Southwest Virginia, where she grew up. She joins us from her home in New York City. Hi, Adriana.
Hello, May Lily, and hello all our listeners in Virginia.
Oh gosh, it's so great to have you back. How was it to direct your first feature-length film?
Well, you know, there's so much to tell you about the experience, but I would say the first thing that I have to say is that I had incredible cast. Wonderful producers, and we had a very, very hard schedule. All of that said, there were, you know, magical things that came out of it that have made the final product absolutely beautiful. We're still in post-production. We're now putting the music in. John Leventhal composing. It's beautiful. Roseanne Cash, who is married to John Leventhal, is contributing music to the movie and words and just beautiful, beautiful art.
Ashley Judd plays Ave Maria.
Ave Maria is played by Ashley Judd. Ashley Judd plays Ave Maria. Patrick Wilson plays Jack McChesney. Jenna Elfman plays Iva Lou.
Oh, you got Whoopi.
LaPaglia plays Speck. Whoopi Goldberg is spectacular as Fleeta.
Now, you fought hard to ensure that this film was shot in Virginia.
Yes.
Tell us about that struggle.
Well, you know, May Lily, I mean, we have so little control in our careers in certain ways that this was something I was really determined about. You know, I grew up in a family where everyone in the family was either self-employed or had their own business. So I have that kind of a... There was no gold watch kind of mentality in my family. It's that, you know, you went into business for yourself. It was a family business. Everybody worked in the business. Everybody helped. And the idea of American manufacturing is in my bones, really. And I could not, for the life of me, understand why all movies had, we had to go to Canada or we had to, they shot Cold Mountain in Prague. I mean, what? And so I look at the numbers, and I'm pretty savvy, and I go, well, wait a minute. If you did this and you did that, and you had the locals invest in it, you could do it. And that's what we did. You know, now listen, everybody had to take very little pay, but everybody was willing to do that because of the script. And the script, many versions deep, because I had tried to get this made for 15 years. I had really a great script because I had a lot of time to really go back and redo it.
That's a real investment. And finally, you saw that come to fruition. You did go home to Big Stone Gap in order to work on this. And you were living with your mom. How was that?
Oh, like, hilarious. Because my mother couldn't understand where I was. She'd say, why does this take so long? You know, because it's like you're really out of the house 15 hours a day. Because if you're directing, you're in charge of everything. So you have to go check the costumes. You have to do small things and big things. I was with my director of photography figuring this out. We had 20 days. Of course, you got your weekends, which were great, but those were working weekends. But living with my mother was really wonderful because I was there for 3 months, and I used her car, and she was obsessed about her car, like how was her car. And she says one day, she said to me, I don't understand this. You know, when you lived here, when you were a kid, you always told me where you were going. I don't understand this. And I said, Ma, this is what this takes.
Did she try to come see you in action?
She still can't get her head around it. And my sisters who came And about midway through the filming, all my brothers and sisters came too. My brother Carlos in the movie, he plays her young father, which Chris Sarandon plays her older father. And another great actor. I mean, every time I mention my cast, there's another one that's John Benjamin Hickey. I keep going. Anyway, so my family came through, and they brought my mother to the set. And to this day, she says to me, what chaos, what a mess. How did anything get done? Because all she saw were the wires and the screaming and the first assistant calling everybody, first AD calling everybody into positions, and the actors running through, and whose dress ripped and had to be pinned, and you know, it was just in wires and cables and cables and monitors, and my mother could not get this.
So she just went home.
Yep, she did. She did. She got all dressed up. She came with my sister. She said, "I got to go home. I can't take it."
Were you bitten by the movie bug? Do you think you want to become a Nora Ephron who directed more and put more of her writing into screenplays?
Well, May Lilly, that's a great question. I've always done this thing where I do whatever makes me grow. For whether it works or not, I try to push myself. So, yes, I would say I would do it, but I'm going to keep it very simple in this way. I would only ever write and direct my own books into films. I wouldn't set up an office and read everybody's screenplays and go through that development process. I would only do my own because at this point in where I'm in my life, in my family life with my daughter and my husband and where we live and how we live, and the books, you know, I came home a couple days after we wrapped in November, went right into post-production, and while I was in post-production, worked on my next novel, which is a big epic. So I kind of do two things at once. I don't recommend that, but post-production is like production in that once you do the job, it's done, and then you move to the next thing. And there's breathing space in there. Because of people's schedules. So, yes, the answer would be yes. Nora Ephron was a very, you know, I met Nora a couple times, and I really liked her and respected her and knew her story. She never directed one of her books into a film. She wrote them, often with partnering with her sister Delia. They'd write the screenplay, but then someone else would direct her books, like Heartburn was not directed by Nora. But then, of course, she wrote and directed her own films based on other subjects and so on and other books. So I would even take that out of the equation for myself and just say, you know, I'll do my own.
Right, right.
In specificity, because, you know, what's so great about making this movie is that when something wasn't working, I rewrote. And I'm pretty facile that way because of my years in television. Although this is a completely different thing, but if something didn't work, you had to quickly think. Or, more importantly, and when you see the movie, May Lily, I'll tell you, like, which scenes. As I was filming, and, for example, with Patrick Wilson, I had Patrick Wilson and Judith Ivey playing his mother. And she's a genius, and so is he. And so they're, you know, I see them interact together, and I said, they need a scene. So I went home that night, and I wrote a scene for them, which I want to... It's one of the most beautiful scenes in the movie about why things haven't worked out for him in his life.
I'm not so sure people understand how difficult that is. Normally there's a screenwriter on the set,
That's
separate
right.
from the director. So here
That's
you
right.
were wearing the hat of director and screenwriter, right. rewriting as you went along.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these 15 years that you put into bringing this to fruition, certainly a big affirmation from then-Governor Bob McDonnell. He
yep.
said several months ago, quote, "We are proud of her continuing success as a writer and are thrilled that her uplifting tribute to her hometown will be brought to life on the screen." By the way, when does it come out?
We're it'll either come out later this year or the spring of next year. I think the spring of next year or winter of next year. Not late winter, but January, February, March in that arena.
I read a paper.
We kind of have
yeah.
a plan in place, but we're leaving it open a little bit, May Lily, because I want to bring it to the audience when the audience wants it. In other words, as a mother, I'm very aware of scheduling of school, and this is a movie where women are going to bring their husbands or their boyfriends or your girlfriends or your sisters, or it's that kind of a film. So I want to be very sensitive to that. You know, whenever they put a movie out for women in September, I just throw my hands up because, are you kidding me? We're getting the kids ready for school. You know, I mean, they don't even think of us. So I am going to, in filming it and in casting it and writing it and directing it, I am going to continue through the distribution process in the same way. I'm going, what's good for you? What's going to be good for your schedule? Because you, my audience, that's who I'm gearing it towards.
I read a paper out of Sheppard University. S. Bailey Sherbert wrote, Trigiani remembers that she knew firsthand the desperation of poverty and the physical toll that manual labor takes on workers. She recalls the nature was both a source of extreme beauty and extreme tragedy, mm-hmm. particularly when the spring floods came. Here's my question around that. The Big Stone Gap trilogy is uplifting in the face of challenges to the region. How do you approach that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The coal industry was very wary of me and wary of the depiction of how was I going to depict the coal miner? And so, you know, I have retired coal miners in the movie and current coal miners in the movie that played with Patrick. The only way I know, you know, my career, if it stands for anything, is to honor the working person. So I walked into this with a deep love for the coal miner and a deep love for that struggle. My grandfather, who fought in World War I and was a shoemaker, worked in the iron ore mines in Minnesota, and they were brutal. So I have a family connection to it. So it always resonated for me. Manufacturing, working in factories, all this stuff, that's my family background. So, and you know, people started with nothing and they figured it out and then eventually had their own factories. That's kind of our family story. So I've just always had a deep sensitivity to that because I knew what it was when something went wrong at the factory and how that affected our day-to-day life. And we worked all our lives. We were as little kids, you know, we could sort buttons. There were things we could do. We had a magnet. We picked up pins on the floor of the factory and stuff. We were always engaged in that this was a family enterprise. So by extension, to me, that's what I create when I make a movie and what I tried to create in Big Stone Gap, because for every movie star, the bench is deep with local actors, and they are resplendent, and they went toe-to-toe with a great actress like Ashley Judd or Patrick Wilson or Judy Ivey. They're right in there, and so that layer, you know, it all feeds into the honoring of the working person for me. I mean, and what they go through. And the fear of it all. I don't know if that answers the question exactly right. Sylvia Sherbert's a great writer, and she really went in there and dug deep. And I, you know, yes, the series is upbeat despite the terrible hardships people have. But really, mate, if I'm gonna get in there and write something, it's gonna be about the landscape of these people and their. To me, what is the gravy of life, the beauty of life, is who we love. So, I mean, and that's not to make it a romantic period, because I hope these books are also empowering, but that's the crux of it for me. I still, at this stage of my life, can't get over how one person can fall in love with another person and say, I'm going to spend my life with you. I think it's the most treacherous, dangerous, crazy, risk-taking maneuver of all time.
And have you discussed this with your husband?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, sure. What? He thinks I'm a little nuts about that, but I think it's absolutely crazy. It's like just throwing yourself on a sled and going downhill really fast on ice.
One of our educational experts reminded us recently that in the Commonwealth, Southwest Virginia is home to some of the poorest educational systems in the state. All the more reason your rise to literary fame holds layers and layers of significance for Virginians. How do you shoulder that?
Well, I had the best teachers in the Wise County Public School System and librarians, who I could name for you right now, because that's how much they meant to me. I still, when I go to my public library in Big Stone Gap, my heart just expands three times, because I spent, when they built it in the late 70s, I was in there like every day. I just couldn't get over the library and the museum and this complex. What I decided to do was, I looked back when I was a kid, and what really mattered to me was when they brought people in to our classrooms, whether it was the director of the museum or my favorite was there was still the WPA in the 70s, nobody knows this, and there was a theater troupe, and they came through and they did The Odd Couple by Neil Simon, and they were a little tipsy, and I'm the only person, because I so wanted to go into the theater, who stayed for the whole thing and realized that the tipsy actor, did act one twice instead of the whole play. So I loved that. So what I made a commitment to do was to go into the classroom, and we're starting with the ninth grade, and we have a project called the Origin Project. We, as Nancy Bollmeyer Fisher and me, and Nancy really kind of invented this going into the classroom, and I'm responsible to go in and bring a professional writer, and we just kicked it off with David Baldacci. So it was my way of staying deeply connected to what I come from there and to honor all of those teachers who were so kind to me and encouraged me and to be a part of the system. Now, I worry because I think sometimes our end of the state is forgotten, and it's where some of the greatest stories and beauty and magnificence exists in the state. But I also, in doing the process of this Origin Project, realized when great, great talents like David Baldacci are willing, he drove to Big Stone Gap and did this project with me to kick it off in the classroom. And to see David in the classroom with the kids was incredible. He knows, and I know, how important it is to support the school systems and to bring something to the table there. And it will, and we're going to add in the fifth grade, by the way, because we realize we've got to start younger even. And we're hoping that we can help the teachers. We can help the teachers by augmenting what they're doing there. But the poverty, I mean, every night I think of those kids because they are truly disenfranchised in many ways. The two-parent family is almost a myth now. And the mothers are doing great, and the dads that I met there are, you know, strong. They don't have access to everything in the world that other kids do in other parts of the state, and indeed other parts of the country. And we're working on that. They just built a new school. But I grew up there, so I know what it is. I'm committed to doing whatever I can to help.
That's so encouraging. Adriana Trigiani, you're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. Our visit with Adriana continues in just a moment after this break. Thank you. Today, we're chatting with one of Virginia's best-known authors. Welcome back. I'm Maylily Lee with Virginia Conversations. Adriana Trigiani is the director and screenwriter of the movie version of her book, Big Stone Gap. It's coming out soon. They're currently in post-production. I say soon. Really, it could be whenever, as you pointed out.
Well,
and Adriana, they'll be...
Once it's finished, Maylily, it'll be finished by the end of June. And then what we do is we pick with our distributor... when it's going to come out. So,
okay.
I talked extensively about this, but I want to pick a time of year that's good for women.
Great.
When we're not inundated with, stuff we have to do.
And there'll be premieres all over the state.
Yes, all over the state. I mean, we're going to make it a real celebration of Virginia. You know, you mentioned Governor McDonald. Every governor, Tim Kaine, keep going back. Mark Warner. I even shook down Governor Belisle. Everybody. And when I say shook down, I mean that with humor. It's just basically, please get behind this for Virginia. But I want to tell you that Delegate Terry Kilgore, I mean, astonishing how he pushed. You know, I think he recognized and all the leadership in Southwest Virginia, like even on a municipal level, our mayor and our town manager and everything, they just killed themselves to get the movie made there. I think they understood how important it was for Virginia to have a story about Virginia made in Virginia.
And this is worth repeating. It took you 15 years to see this project.
15 years, yes.
And also, there aren't many people out there
who... I was in my 30s. It's hilarious. Yeah.
There aren't many people who are wearing the hat of the director and the screenwriter, people who are actually directing feature-length films and then doing rewrites on set. This is just not really done in the industry, and you're doing it, and for the first time, I should add.
Thank you so much. Well, I think it was the most efficient way to work, and, I got lucky because I got an incredible world-class cinematographer, director of photography, Reynaldo Villalobos, and he has such experience for everything from Risky Business to Bronx Tale to the first season of Breaking Bad. I mean, he got the movie, he got the script, and I didn't have to worry. I went out with him and we figured out what it was going to look like, and then he'd sometimes turn to me and goes, where are you putting the camera? And I just, on the job, taking care of the actors is my main focus. Telling the story is equal to taking care of the actors. And then how it looks when you see it. And when I see it now post-production, it absolutely has brought my dreamscape to life.
That is, when
I listen... It's really a great movie. And I know I'm not supposed to say that, but it really is. You're going to just be thrilled with it.
Can't wait. As I listen to you, I keep thinking that if we gave you the Myers-Briggs personality test, I'm guessing that you would come out an E, a strong extrovert. But a lot of writers...
Isn't that funny? Because I had to really work at being an extrovert.
Wow.
That something? I was a shy kid. And I always was amusing and entertaining and wanted to have fun. But I would specifically make myself, because I knew... I was taught good manners at home, but I said, say good morning to that person. And I was 9 years old. Say good morning. And I was like, oh, I can't do it. I'm mortified. And I made myself do it. Because I knew that the key to having fun was to talk to people and get to know people and be friends with people. So that was part of it. I had to get out of that.
Where does your energy come from?
Nothing. I mean, I don't suffer from any kind of nerves when I meet new folks and stuff. I just don't.
Where does your energy come from? Do you get refueled when you are in the company of people, or do you get refueled when you take alone time?
Well, definitely the alone time. I require a lot of alone time, which is why I get up so early.
Yeah, tell our audience.
If I can have 3 or 4 hours before everybody's awake, I really can have a productive day.
You're up really early. Tell them what the hours are.
I get up sometimes 3:30, but I go to bed at 8:30 or 9. So I really get a great night's sleep. I'm a good sleeper.
That really makes sense. By the way, the Nevermore Club, the book club in Wise County, your
love
hometown,
it.
Has submitted questions for you. They
couldn't love anything more.
I know. Well, they were thrilled to participate, and we'll be asking you some of their questions shortly. But first, why do you think there are so many local book clubs populated by women? Why so few men's book clubs?
Well, the men always get all, you know, hepped up when we say we don't have men in the book club. It's really, we'll have one or two. It's by and large women. Women have a need, really, to talk. I don't know. I wouldn't say I have extensive experience with men, but certainly have two brothers, my dad, you know. But they don't yak like we do, and about things that are important to us. I want to dissect everything and can spend hours talking to my girlfriends about particular things. I think a book club, it serves two purposes. It feeds our minds and our idea center and our creativity. And secondly, it's a gathering of women, and, you know, nothing ever happened in this world without a gathering of women. So it kind of is it's twofold. And I have a ball. I've been talking to book clubs for 15 years. I love it.
Well, they love you. And let's start with one of the first questions that they provided. Your books have been published in several different countries and translated into several different languages, mm-hmm. to say the least. Does the story of a small town in Virginia resonate with readers in other countries?
Absolutely. In fact, they prefer them. They love our small town life, you know. I tour the world extensively, too, and I go to one of my favorite countries. I love the UK. I love that United Kingdom. I love my Scotland, my Wales, my Ireland, England. I love it all. And they are particularly smitten with the Big Stone Gap series. They love them all, but that's very precious to them.
Why do you
think?
And
I think it's because of the small coastal towns sometimes, or, you know, they can relate. And then other places in the world, you know, I was stunned. South Africa, very popular there. Spain, Italy, France, yeah, they love it. Poland was big. Germany loves the Big Stone Gap books.
Mm.
So, you know, all over the world they're into it. You're certainly in Asia also. So,
And mostly female readers?
I guess they're universal.
And are you finding their female readers as well, internationally speaking?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Here's
Absolutely.
Another question from a member of the Nevermore Book Club. What has been the most gratifying reaction to a book you've written?
Really, all of them. I know that's a dodge, but when a woman takes my hand and goes, I just lost my husband, and you described it, or have you lost a child because I lost a child and you wrote about that, or thank you for explaining how I feel. To me, these are the most important things in life, is how we navigate grief, loss, love. The grief, nobody told me that just the grief of when you're a parent and every stage, you just, it's ashes in your hand. And you realize that it's a temp job. And why didn't anybody tell me this? I would have had 50 kids. You know what I mean?
We talked earlier
about... It's all interesting to me. Or maybe people told me and I wasn't ready to hear it. These are the things I write about because I think it connects us. So it's natural that a book club would take to these themes, you know?
Mm-hmm. And we talked earlier about how you have an 11-year-old daughter,
mm-hmm.
and one of the Nevermore Book Club members writes, the theme of family, especially female relationships of mother, grandmother, daughter, mm-hmm. sister, has always been a prominent part of your work. Has your writing changed now that you have a daughter yourself? You're a mom.
Well, I guess this is the power of the subconscious and the imagination, but I wrote about being a mother before I was a mother.
Mm.
And I would say now I have to work a little harder to not keep it all private, if that makes sense.
It's too close, in other words?
Yes. It would be very difficult for me to write about my own daughter. But it opens me up artistically to write about my grandmothers and my mother.
But that's the Holy Grail. Your daughter is your Holy Grail.
Because she's a work of art that's being created by her own energy, you know?
Aww.
And I feel like I'm poaching a little bit there.
Mm-hmm. So we hit the one Achilles heel in your family.
That's the Achilles heel right there. Yep, you hit it. My husband, not so much. My daughter, yes.
Another question. You worked in TV and film before you wrote your first novel. A lot of people didn't understand this. Do you feel that working in the visual medium influenced your writing?
Well, I'm the describer, aren't I? I either get people love it or they hate it, but I am so into description. I will take probably 8 hours to describe the color of a glass of milk. And I'm into it. It's both things to me. When I was a kid, I loved that thing in the Reader's Digest, that little section where they described things.
Yes.
You know, and so then I would try to do my own, you know, when they would, I don't know, there was a section in there, I forget what it was called, but it was great. And as a reader, I always enjoyed that. Now, I am told sometimes I overdo it, but you're just going to get a lot of icing on the cake with me, and I think you know that before you start reading.
But isn't that one of the things that writers are encouraged to do, especially beginning writers? Give us the details.
Yes, but, you know, I didn't know how to write a novel. I really, honestly, May Lily, wandered into this. My girlfriend, Suzanne, who's a book agent, said you need to write a novel when she read the screenplay, Big Stone Gap. I said, oh, my God, because books are so sacrosanct to me. My mother was a librarian. I mean, I'm like, oh, you kidding me? And then her husband, who's a novelist, she said, call my husband. I called Tom Dija, and who, by the way, has written beautiful, beautiful fiction and nonfiction. And he said, just tell me the story. So I gathered up all my notes over the years that I had made about this woman, Ave Maria. I read them, I threw them out, and I sat down and wrote the book over the course of a year at, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning.
Mm. Are you a writer who knows exactly where a story is going before it's written? And this is from the Nevermore folks, too. They want to know, do you find that your characters dictate what happens? Which way does it go?
Well, it can be either, and sometimes it's both. But I outline and I think about things. I didn't know who was going to die in the Supreme Macaroni Company. So when I get a letter saying, you know, why did this character die? And I write them back and I go, really? I didn't know it was going to be him. I thought it was going to be another character.
And we should point out that the Supreme Macaroni Company is the final installment of your Valentine series.
Yes.
Very exciting.
But of course, we never say never. To be hit by a bolt and go, uh-oh, I want to find out what happened to her.
That's right.
It's
reported.
I certainly feel that way about Ave Maria and Jack. I want to know what happened to them.
That's great. Yes, reportedly, your final installment. Your family, here's another one from the Nevermore folks, kept close ties to Italy. What was it like the first time you went to see it for yourself?
Oh, it's making me cry just to hear the question. I felt complete. I felt these people look like me. Their mannerisms are like mine. Of course, mine are like my mother's and my father's. I felt a deeper regard for the mountains I grew up in when I went to the Alps. Like, I can't get over them now. And, you know, it's not just me. Folks that came from all over. You know, Anthony LaPaglia, he has roots in Sicily, and he grew up in Australia. And he brought his bike. He's a big biker, and he was, like, biking through the mountains. And every actor just would turn to me as we were filming a scene or before and go, just look around. And to bring, you know, to grow up and leave there to work, right? My parents stayed, and my mother's still there. And to see how very often the Appalachian people are portrayed, but to know the truth of who they really are and then take that message, it was just all illuminated for me in Italy. Cy Twombly, the painter, said that the best preparation for Italy is Virginia.
Mm.
Because every great artist, architect, tries to go study in Italy because that's where the stuff is, right? The ancient stuff. You want to go over there, and honestly, it's the light. There's a certain kind of light there. Made me, when I went home to Big Stone Gap, appreciate the light there. If you sat on my mother's back porch and you look, you have an unobstructed view of a mountain that I have been in love with since I was a little kid. I knew I loved the mountain, but I didn't know why. And when I came back, I realized it, and I realized it all came full circle for me after I went to Italy, which was I felt like it was a set, like a theater set, like a pop-up book is the way I guess I could describe, the way the mountain walls intersect each other. And that's really where my respect and love, you know, for the environment I grew up in really comes from, was to have gone to Italy because of my deep blood ties there, but also the beauty, you know, the beauty of this, of appreciating this place.
Do you get to go back often?
Yes, I try to go every year.
What do you favor, southern Italy, northern Italy?
I love it all. I mean, I can't, you know, Lake Como is one of my favorite places on earth. It's over the mountain from where my mother's family's from. But, you know, really, it's that mountain. That's what I love to go up that mountain and just be in the village and walk where my grandmother walked and, you know, sit on the rock she sat on. And it's like time just, it's almost like it's a fog, smoke of some kind.
Adriana, in our remaining moments, can you share with us upcoming projects you want to tell us about?
Well, I'm writing a big epic right now, another big epic that comes out next year that's really juicy, really big and juicy, and I think my readers are going to flip out.
Can you give us a little more?
I don't want to say what it's about, but let me just put it this way. The movie Life plays into it. The life of the cinema plays into it. It was
no
wonderful,
accident.
Too. And also, it was a way to convince my dear editor and publisher, Jonathan Burnham, that I was, in fact, not leaving books. I was just going off to direct a movie when I told him what the book was about. He was quite thrilled. I think, though, like every woman, every mother or not, grandmother or not, aunt, whatever, we know we can do it all. Not all at the same time, but we can do it all. And so upcoming is going to be the release of Big Stone Gap in a new novel.
Wonderful. That's Adriana Trigiani, author and now filmmaker. Look for the premiere of her film, Big Stone Gap, in movie theaters. You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. This reminder that past editions of Virginia Conversations can be heard at virginiapublicradio.org. We'll be back with a conversation with filmmaker Sarah Elizabeth Timmons right after this.
Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, supporting public discourse through sponsorship of Virginia Public Radio. Resources for parents and teachers online at veanea.org. More information about Virginia Conversations and other Virginia Public Radio programming can be found online at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.
Welcome back to Virginia Conversations. I'm May Lily Lee. The last time we spoke with Sarah Elizabeth Timmons, she was on the set of the movie Wish You Well. The adaptation of the David Baldacci novel was being filmed in Giles County. As the owner of Laugh Out Loud Films, Sarah Elizabeth has a full plate as a film producer. Since that interview more than a year ago, Sarah Elizabeth has been keeping busy with a couple of new film projects involving stories right here in Virginia. Sarah Elizabeth, welcome back to Virginia Conversations.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be back.
Let's talk a little bit about Wish You Well, which was released in 2013. Was that everything that you imagine when you first started partnering with David Baldacci on this?
You know, it's more than I ever could have imagined. Working with David Baldacci was just amazing. He's such a great person and obviously a very talented writer. But the addition of Ellen Burstyn and Josh Lucas and Mackenzie Foy to our cast was just, you know, a dream come true, and the film itself turned out beautiful. So we're very, both David and myself and our other producing partner, Karen, are all very excited about the final product.
Adriana Trigiani talked about how difficult it was to turn her book into a movie in Virginia. To get it shot in Virginia was a real struggle. What about here? Was it easy or hard to make Virginia a location?
You know, a film is never easy. I think a lot more people would do it. But with the infrastructure that we kind of set into place with our first film, Lake Effect, which is currently on Hallmark Channel, we shot that at Smith Mountain Lake. So several of the crew members, and you know, we utilized the same resources in many cases again. So we have a really strong support system here in Virginia, which made it a little bit easier, I think, for us. But there has its advantages, and there's always things that you always have to go back to Los Angeles and New York and kind of pull into Virginia. But there's surprisingly a really great infrastructure here in Virginia to be able to make film. And I'll tell you, David was such a trooper. He was on set the majority of the time, and he was sitting there rewriting parts of the script, depending on the adjustments that we had to make as we were going forward.
We should point out he was the screenwriter, which doesn't always translate. A novelist doesn't necessarily already have the tools to be the screenwriter as well.
Well, exactly. And what's kind of unique about this situation is that David wrote the screenplay first years ago and then wrote the novel Wish You Well. And so we went back to the original form, which a lot of people don't know.
That's really... Now let's talk a little bit about Lake Effects, released in 2012, a feature film on location at Smith Mountain Lake. The film is an inspirational feature of drama and comedy. The company's unique focus is not only to make an inspirational product, but to inspire the community through that filmmaking process. Did that achieve what you wanted?
Absolutely. It's been a tool for, you know, the Roanoke CVB and the Smith Mountain Lake Chamber. I know that the Franklin County Office of Tourism has gotten calls from people. The most recently was somebody in Texas that asked for some travel brochures and visitor information. And when they asked where they heard about it, they said, you know, I discovered the lake from this movie that was on Hallmark. So it's definitely introducing people to the area, and I was really excited after doing the local premiere to find that people felt that we represented the area and the people very genuinely, and that was always important to us, is to keep the honesty behind any film that we do and the real people that we portray.
You know, when we first started this conversation, our producer, Jerry Caldwell, asked you, Sarah, are you in L.A.? Or are you in Virginia? Now, I know as a filmmaker, that's a real tough decision. Do you stay close to home or do you go where the movie makers are? Your answer was, I'm in Virginia.
Absolutely. I love making film in Virginia. It's a beautiful area, a gorgeous country. the people and the support that I have found in Southwest Virginia has just been unbelievable, and I would not trade it for the world. I have to stay connected to Los Angeles because those are the people that buy the film and distribute it. So I do keep my connections there and do try to stay up on things. But I love being in Virginia, and I don't see myself leaving anytime soon.
Did Virginia claim you?
So far, and the next two as well.
Did Virginia claim you, or did you claim Virginia?
I think it was pretty mutual. I hope.
Where were you born and raised? Where are you from?
I'm from Northeast Ohio, a little town called Warren. But my parents retired to Smith Mountain Lake, which is how I found the area.
Okay, now let's talk a little bit about some projects in the works now. Shoeless Wonders and Chesapeake. Let's start with Shoeless Wonders. Your plan is to begin filming in 2015. It's a true story of a team of shoeless orphans from Lynchburg who played football, and they played it well. Tell us more.
Well, the Presbyterian Home, which is based in Lynchburg, has an amazing history. And back in the 1920s, there was a group of boys at the home who were orphaned and wanted to play football just like any of the other local school teams. But they didn't have the equipment and they didn't have the money. And so they ended up playing football shoeless. They were called the Shoeless Wonders, and they went undefeated and unscored upon from 1922 to 1930. So it's an amazing true story. Really with an organization that is very well known and respected and supported in the Lynchburg area. And it's a real piece of history that I feel very honored to have been chosen to kind of preserve it through this inspiring sports story.
Now, at what stage of production are you?
We've spent about a year now researching the story, talking to some of the real players. We've interviewed them all on camera and kind of learned a little bit about the true stories that we can base the entire script on authentic stories and not have to make anything up. And, I mean, absolutely, it is all there and then some. It should probably be like a three-part series at this point. And the writing of the script should start here within the next month.
Great. Now, currently in production is Chesapeake. It features Keith Carradine, written and directed by Eric Hurt. It's a visual tale co-starring the disappearing waterman culture and the breathtaking beauty of the Chesapeake Bay. Tell us about that and where you are in production.
We're in the development phase right now for Chesapeake. The script, it's a beautiful script that was written, as you said, by Eric Hurt. We are in the fundraising stage. We do have money secured, but we also need more in order to green light. The goal is to shoot that one in the spring summer of 2015. And it's, you know, really focuses, it will showcase the Chesapeake Bay and the story itself, hopefully as the story speaks to people, which is fictional, it will really create an awareness for the Chesapeake Bay and hopefully draw people to really look into some of the issues right now that are plaguing the Bay from a, you know, preservation and ecosystem standpoint. I mean, the Bay is in danger in many cases. And this waterman culture, which has been a staple of that area and that community for so long, is disappearing. So it's our goal to capture that and to share that with the rest of the world.
Sarah Elizabeth, I'm doing the math. If you're shooting in 2015, Shoeless Wonders, and you're shooting in 2015, Chesapeake, your friends are going to disown you because you're just not going to be available for any kind of social life.
I don't have a social life. And Shoeless Wonders, it will either be, we want to do the fall because it's a football story, and the color, the fall color in the Virginia, you just can't beat it. It's beautiful. So if it would either be fall of 2015 or fall of 2016. That is still kind of up in the air, obviously. We want to make sure that we don't cram them too close together that either loses the attention it needs. So it's possible to do them both, but it's also possible that we do 2016 is also potential for Shoeless Wonders. But Yeah, there's, if you're producing film, you don't have much time for a social life.
Now, something that a lot of people might not know about you is that you have also acted. You're not just working behind the scenes. You've got experience in front of the screen as well.
Yes, that's actually how it started. I've been acting, well, my mother would say, for 38 years. but that was my first love, and it's actually what drew me to discover the producing element. And I was the bartender, if you see Lake Effects, and I also had a small role as the nurse with Ellen Burstyn in Wish You Well. And I enjoy it, and it's a passion of mine. So I do try to do a small bit in every single film that I do produce.
But let's talk about that. It seems to me the real power is behind the scenes. When you are a producer, there just seems to be so much more going on with that than when you're one of the hires for an on-screen role.
Well, it's interesting because one of the reasons I was drawn to get back into producing is as a producer, I can make projects happen. In my case, I find a story that I fall in love with, which has been every single one I've done so far, and I sit down and say, okay, how can we make this happen? And so I raise the money, and I put together the cast and the crew, and you know, I'm not waiting for someone to cast me in a role and tell me that I'm good enough. You know, and acting is so, you can go into an audition and absolutely nail it and do a great job, but they wanted a blonde. Or they wanted someone that looked a little bit older. So this was a way for me to say, I love producing and acting. I'm not going to sit around and wait for someone else to give me the opportunity. Let's take my destiny into my own hands and not only pursue my dream, but help others pursue their dream by giving them the opportunity to work on film and to collaborate. So it's really the best of both worlds, and I love it. I love what I do. I feel so blessed every day.
You've been doing this long enough that you have the experience to comment on this change of technology. We're now in an age where we can actually create high-def images with simple, low-cost equipment. And that means just about anybody with a film camera or a camera can make a movie, make a feature film. So that's sort of the downside, is anybody's a filmmaker now. On the plus side, the costs of production go down when technology is more affordable. How do you view all of this as a filmmaker?
What I think is really neat about the technology is filmmaking is no longer something that is just limited to people that have the financial means. So people that have the talent and the ability are now able to get a hold of the tools that they need to showcase that talent. So I think it's really amazing in that sense. It means that there's a lot more product out there, which can seem scary to some people. You know, there's a lot more competition. But at the end of the day, the cream of the crop and filmmakers that really have a strong sense, not only creatively, but on the business side, because you have to create audiences, you have to be able to market your film and get it seen, really do rise to the top. So I think it's amazing the opportunities that it really affords and puts filmmaking, makes it much more accessible.
When you're putting together budgets and you're out actually raising funds for the production of a film, are you finding that the numbers are better now than they used to be, say, 7 years ago?
It really depends on what numbers you're looking at. I think that the economy plays a big part in whether or not people have the ability to and money to invest into a film project. I find that there's a lot more, you know, all of our films are technically in the low budget category.
And what would that be? What is, numbers-wise, what is low budget?
Well, technically low budget on the SAG contracts are everything that's under 2.5. But
million.
You're talking about anywhere from $500,000 to 2.5 is a range. And what's nice about that is if you're able to utilize this new technology and better equipment at a lower cost, it becomes much easier to, not easier is not the word, but the ability to give your investors their money back by keeping the costs low is a business model that I found that is much more lucrative. If somebody handed me $10 million tomorrow and said, go make Chesapeake or Shoeless Wonders, I would say no, because I can make it for a low-budget contract and put my investors in a better position to see money back in the end.
Right. And isn't there also this challenge? The independent filmmaker is now strapped with a limited budget and therefore called upon to be more creative. Let's figure out how we can do it. We're not going to get lazy because we have $10 million. We're going to think through this and be as efficient as possible and even utilize our creativity as much as possible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the passion behind making something in that way shows on the screen. The things that have gone wrong, what people would say gone wrong or went off plan is probably better. In the last two films were all things that by working through them and being creative made each film hands down better. You get lazy when the money's there and you don't have to worry about it. And in my mind, whether the money's there or not, there is an investor whose face I know and who's become a friend who I am now responsible to create the best product possible and to make it as marketable as possible so that they can see a return. And that's always at the forefront of my mind, which I also think makes independent film a little bit different than a studio. All of those things add to the creativity. And people think that you're limited with a low budget on the talent that you can get. But the truth is there's a lot of named talent and A-list actors that want to work on a film with heart and a script that they really believe in. And oftentimes you'll hear celebrities in an interview talk about they do all these big blockbuster films so they can go and do an independent film that they really care about.
So for you, what's the most challenging aspect of production? Is it fundraising? Is it those 5 days you get to shoot and everything is on the line for those five shoot days? Or is it post-production when you're editing everything? What's toughest?
Right now, because I'm in the phase of raising film or raising money,
right.
Fundraising is for me, it just takes a lot of time. And that is the one aspect that I felt like if I had one or two people that just said, here's a fund, go make three or four films, then I would be able to do what I love to do best. The making of a film is fun. The actual production part is probably the easiest. And finishing a film and getting it finished is also part of nothing's easy, but the easier process. I think that the challenge always lies in raising the money to make the next film, which is an ongoing process, and then distributing it. You know, once you have a great product, who's going to buy it? What are they going to give you for it? And that changes with the market and what's happening in our world.
Sarah Elizabeth Timmons, owner of Life Out Loud Films, and check out her upcoming projects, Shoeless Wonders, which is in production now. She plans to begin filming in 2015 if all of the pieces fall into place, as well Chesapeake, currently in production as well, featuring Keith Carradine. Such a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you.
Good luck with the future projects, and we hope to have you back on. That's all the time we have for this edition of Virginia Conversations. I want to thank our guests, Adriana Trigiani and Sarah Elizabeth Timmons, and a special thanks to the members of the Nevermore Book Club of Wise County for sending in those questions for today's program. Thanks for listening to this edition of Virginia Conversations. I'm Maylily Lee. Hope you'll join us next time.
Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org. And by listeners of this Virginia Public Radio member station. Listeners can hear this program again or access other Virginia Public Radio news content at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.